This is New Tech City, WNYC's weekly look at how technology is changing the way New Yorkers live. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. Debate number one between President Obama and Governor Romney tomorrow night. Topic number one, jobs and the economy. Unemployment stands at 8.1% for the country. Here in New York, it's 9.9%. So let's talk about finding a job in the digital age. Whether you're working now or you're one of the more than 12.5 million people unemployed, when you apply for a job, the goal is for your resume to catch the eye of an employer, right? Well, as companies require job seekers to apply online, increasingly the first thing you have to do is actually please the computer. Software that automatically scans and screens your resume, no human involved, has become a nearly $4 billion industry and the first step in the hiring process at nearly all large companies. These applicant tracking systems are a godsend for overloaded HR departments, but they're a hazard for job hunters who don't know about them, like reporter Ben Bradford.
It's estimated about 90% of large companies use some form of this software. So I asked Barbara Safani, a Manhattan career consultant, how does my resume stack up against the machine?
There are a lot of things I see here that could immediately just kick it out just because the software can't read it.
Like what?
For example, on your resume, you have your dates of employment going across columns.
Mm-hmm. The eye reads left to right, and it goes left to right.
Apparently, this is not as great an idea as I'd hoped. Turns out my resume has all kinds of problems. It's a PDF. That's harder for machines to digest. My dates are in the wrong place. My work experience goes the wrong direction. And I have this beautiful side column showing off my impressive digital skills. But the software might read it and think I worked at Digital Skills Incorporated. Thankfully, Safani says these things are all easy to fix once you know what to look for.
I think it can add a layer of complexity to the process. It's not rocket science, though.
Eric Lochner is an executive at Conexa, one of the biggest employment software companies. Some of their clients include Walmart, GE, and Starbucks.
Our largest client receives over 1 million candidates a month. Our average client will receive anywhere between 15 and 40,000 candidates a month.
Lochner says automation means companies can find quality candidates in a day where it used to take weeks. And job hunters benefit too.
The process is so much more simplified and streamlined, whereas all of these CVs go into one database. The CV doesn't get put in an outbox or accidentally deleted.
Once it's in the database, a resume can be filtered, graded, or ranked by how well it matches a job, so recruiters only spend time looking at the best fits. But even as more and more companies turn to these programs for their searches, many still aren't finding the people they want. Up to half of all employers say they can't find qualified workers. And University of Pennsylvania professor Peter Capelli says the software actually plays a part in this.
There may be people who haven't done exactly this job, but have done similar jobs, and it's a sort of judgment call as to whether the combination of those jobs are enough. So the software can't make those judgment calls, so all those people are tossed out.
Capelli says he heard from one manager who had 25,000 people apply for a standard engineering job, and not one came up qualified. At a recent job fair in Manhattan, some people are catching on that they can improve their odds against the machine. Renee McMichael is looking for a full-time job in healthcare IT. She thinks she knows how to beat the software, list specific words and types of computer programs used in her profession.
The software that I'm an expert on, I always make sure to put that word, the name of the software, Amesis, 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 so they go, wow, 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 you see, when they run it through whatever system they have on their end.
Recruiters and resume consultants say that you need to customize your resume for every job you apply for and match the criteria exactly. One size fits all doesn't work anymore. Now you'll have to excuse me. I got to go redo my resume. For WNYC, I'm Ben Bradford.
Okay, so let's forget about looking for a job. There are some crafty New Yorkers who are actually taking matters into their own hands. This weekend was the Maker Faire, a sort of do-it-yourself slash science fair slash tech entrepreneur mashup. Reporter Stan Alcorn went to check out what's called the Maker Movement.
I found Andy Weekin squatting next to a recumbent bike that was hooked up to two 50-watt light bulbs.
We're pedal power. We've done everything from there's a sewing machine there that's pedal powered. We've done water pumping. We've done grain grinding. And this one is doing electricity. That's right. You want to watch TV? Here it is.
Is this your like full full-time thing?
I wish. this is my avocation. It's ideally, so we'd actually make a commercial business out of selling the hardware, but then still open source so that people could learn from what we're doing. But it's not paying the bills right now.
If Pedal Power does start paying the bills, it wouldn't surprise Maker Faire founder Dale Doherty.
I call makers sort of accidental entrepreneurs. They didn't necessarily intend to set up a business, but they get kind of dragged into it, in a sense, by demand.
But demand has its limits. Standing next to Doherty is a sculpture that Jesse Green made as a wedding gift.
We have friends who were getting married in Vermont, and they really like unicorns and fire and glitter. And this was all of those things.
Green combined all of those things into a flame-shooting, glitter-sneezing unicorn sculpture. It's named after the singer Katy Perry and has its own backup dancers in glittery hot pants and neon wigs. The wider demand for this specialty item turns out to be surprisingly high.
It turns out a lot of people have expressed interest in renting it, but then the problem is that you're doing it as a business. It becomes less fun, and if you bring it to people's weddings, then you have to go to a lot of people you don't know's weddings, which is horrible.
So any listeners looking to start a business, the wedding unicorn industry is all yours. For WNYC, I'm Stan Alcorn.
And finally, a public service announcement. Apple recently replaced Google Maps on its iPhone with its own map application, which had some problems. The CEO has since apologized for stranding people, but tech bloggers are debating whether Mapplegate, and no, I can't claim credit for that term, will hurt the brand. Meanwhile, Apple Maps can get you lost. I discovered that the map doesn't know the difference between Broadway and West Broadway. The map also disappears the minute you go on the subway, which is really annoying. What have you discovered in Apple's alternate New York universe? Tell us on our website, wnyc.org/tech, or on Twitter at New Tech City. And download our podcast, free from iTunes. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and this is New Tech City from WNYC.